In New York, and I would like to welcome tonight to the WNAW-FM microphones Barbara Graustark, who has written a story and had the chance to interview, as the headline says in this week's Newsweek magazine, the real John Lennon. Good evening, Barbara.
Hi, Dennis.
I think the question that comes to everyone's mind immediately is, because this is the first major interview that John Lennon has done in 5 years, how'd you get it?
Well, I think it was probably just luck. In fact, I asked John that question. I said, to what do I owe this honor? And he said, I don't know. Yoko made me do it. I think Newsweek had a good relationship with Yoko, and we got along pretty well.
Now, when did this happen? When did this occur? How recent is the interview?
This is about a fortnight ago and over a period of maybe 3 or 4 days.
Where? Where did you conduct it?
Oh, it took place everywhere. I went for a walk in Central Park. It took place in the Dakota, where they have their apartments, and Yoko has her studio, her office. Took place down at the Hit Factory, where they're putting the finishing touches to their new record. And part of it took place in a Zen coffee shop on West 57th Street.
All over. Did you feel nervous? Well, that's a silly question. I imagine that you must have felt some sort of nervousness. I mean, you are a person who grew up with the Beatles, as we all did, I imagine. Right? Was there a special air of excitement, or did you just walk in and say, well, I'm a reporter, and this is my job, and I'm going to talk to John and Yoko? And
well, if it should be an old saying, or maybe it is, that old Beatlemaniacs never die. They just grow up to be rock writers and rock critics.
And disc jockeys.
And DJs, too.
Right.
Meeting Lennon is like, I don't know, sort of confronting your own childhood. In fact, Pete Hamill once called the Beatles the custodians of childhood, and they certainly were of my childhood. I think it was that the sense of excitement out of being in the audience at Shea Stadium or being in the audience at the Ed Sullivan Show that probably made me want to become a writer and made critics want to become critics, because it was that challenge to describe that overwhelming sensation of those years. And you couldn't describe it, and that's what makes you really want to write poetry or write stories. Lennon said to me that journalists must be even more schizophrenic than other writers, because they're always trying to stand apart from those feelings and to write about them objectively. And it was hard for me. I just sort of wanted to hug the guy.
Did you have set questions in your mind? I mean, did you walk in there fully prepared, having written out things to ask him specifically?
Well, I had about 200 questions, and a lot more came to mind when he started talking. And after about 15 minutes, I kind of threw the questions up in the air, and we went off from there.
I can imagine that one of the first questions you must have asked him is what he has been doing all this time, because one of the great questions we've all had is, where have they been? I mean, for the most part, the only public awareness of John and Yoko has been the ad that appeared last summer in the New York Times. Barbara was very gracious, and through the cooperation of herself and Newsweek and John and Yoko, we have a chance tonight to listen to some of the responses that appear in print in Newsweek magazine. This is the issue on the stands now with Vanessa Redgrave on the cover. And we will listen to what John Lennon had to say about what he's been doing all this time.
Well, what I did in the last 10 years is rediscover that I was John Lennon before the Beatles, after the Beatles, and so be it. One moment, the actual moment when I remembered who I was, completely, not in glimpses, I never really lost complete touch with myself, but a lot of the time did for long periods of time, was in a room in Hong Kong, because Yoko had sent me on a trip around the world by myself, and I hadn't done anything by myself since I was 20. I didn't know how to call for room service, check in a hotel. Now, this sounds good. If somebody reads this and they think, oh, you know, these bloody pop stars or these actors, and they don't understand the pain. I'd managed to get there and get in the hotel and not have any road managers or servants. So all I found, I was sitting in this room, taking baths, which I'd noticed Yoko did and women do. Every time I got nervous, I took a bath. Great female tricker. It's a great one. So I'd had about 40 baths. And I'm looking out over the Hong Kong Bay and think, what is this? There's something that's like ringing a bell. What is it? And then I just got very, very relaxed. And it was like a recognition. My God, it's me. This relaxed person is me. I remember this guy from way back when. This feeling is from way, way, way back when. This is, I know what I'm doing. I know who I am. It doesn't rely on any outside agency or adulation or non-adulation or achievement or non-achievement or hit record or no hit record or anything. Absolutely irrelevant. You know, he knows how to do things. He knows how to get around. He knows how to form a group. He knows how to do everything he wants to do. Wow! So I called and said, guess who? It's me! It's me! So this period was that, to reestablish me as me for myself.
Despite all of
that's why I'm free of the Beatles. Because I took time to free myself mentally from it and to look at what it is. And now I know. So here I am.
From the Imagine album, John Lennon and a song called Oh Yoko. We'll continue with our interview with Barbara Graustark of Newsweek magazine and highlights from John Lennon from the magazine at WNEW-FM in New York. My special guest tonight in the studio is Barbara Graustark, who interviewed John Lennon very recently in an interview that appears this week in Newsweek magazine. And between now and whenever we get through, we are having the chance to listen also, not only to Barbara describe what it was like to be there and what she learned, but also some of the comments that John made that appear in the interview. And we have the recorded transcript of the interview. We heard John before speak about, so to speak, quote-unquote, finding himself over the last 5 years. But what was he actually doing? The Walls and Bridges album, which was the last new album he recorded, came out in 74. Then the Rock and Roll album, which had already been recorded, but there had been legal hassles, that came out in 75. He got back together with Yoko. And no John Lennon. What was he actually doing during that period?
Well, first of all, he and Yoko got back together, and soon after, Yoko became pregnant with her first child with Lennon at the age of 42. And then, about the time that she became pregnant, he disappeared. He went underground. And I think the thing to remember here about Lennon, too, is, as he points out, is that he has always withdrawn at key periods in his life. For him, he said it's survival. Knowing when to stop is very, very important. He did it in the Himalayas with the Maharishi and the Beatles. He did it with Yoko, with Janov, when they went into primal therapy for 9 months. And this was just another withdrawal period. No different, says Lennon, than the way a businessman is sent by his company in Japan to a Zen monastery. Except suddenly, he wasn't in the public eye. What he was doing was having a lot of fun and making money and spending it, but he just wasn't doing it publicly.
Well, I mean, like, the cows, raising
the
cows.
Well, I think what's funny is what John wasn't doing. The reports from the front come trickling in over the last 5 years. John's been a cow farmer, and John's a recluse. He's sitting away pining in one of his five Dakota apartments, just watching his fingernails grow long and his hair fall out. I mean, I'm happy to say that John's hair hasn't fallen out, and not only that, but he doesn't even have a touch of gray at the temples.
Mm-hmm.
What he's been doing is raising his son, Sean, who is now 5 years old, because as John points out, Julian, the son by his first wife, Cynthia, he never saw Julian grow up. He was a Beatle, and so he missed Julian's childhood and wanted to devote 5 solid years of being there to Sean. What he also did was he and Yoko kind of switched roles. Yoko took over the running of the Ono Lennon empire. She was the business manager. They have no more managers. There's no Epstein and there's no Klein. And John sat around and he watched television and he listened to the radio, he listened to classical music and Muzak, and he read anthropology and archaeology, and he was there for every one of Sean's meals, and he was, in John's words, a rich house husband.
Do you think that he was at all involved with rock and roll? I mean, you said he listened primarily to classical music. When you were in his apartment, did you see any rock and roll records scattered around or anything like that? You didn't get a chance to see anything like that type situation.
Well, I asked him specifically, you know, were you listening to music? Did you ever go to any rock clubs?
All right, let's take a listen to the answer.
No, maybe a little reggae or something like that.
Was it lack of interest?
It's like asking Picasso, has he been to the museum lately? Okay? Picasso didn't go to museums, all right?
Now, I'm going to repeat that statement that John Lennon made because it went by rather quickly and some of you might have had a difficult time. Barbara Graustark in Newsweek magazine asked John Lennon, did he ever go to any clubs to see music? Listen up, because it's a funny comment.
No, maybe a little reggae or something like that.
Was it lack of interest?
It's like asking Picasso, has he been to the museum lately? Okay? Picasso didn't go to museums, all right?
Now, when he says it's like asking Picasso if he went to the museum, I mean, is he comparing himself to Picasso in that sense,
well,
did you think?
Oh, I don't know. It's up to you to interpret it. I think what he's saying, I mean, I feel like some spiritual medium interpreting John Lennon's
right,
world.
Right, and we don't mean to do that, but obviously there has been all this time gone by with very little, and you are, quote-unquote, our link to find out what's been going on with John Lennon. I don't profess to have you proclaim that you know everything. You spent time with him and you got the interview. So it is from that angle that we ask you the
okay.
questions tonight.
I think what John is saying and what he's trying to get across is really that he didn't make a conscious effort to listen to rock and roll because he really is not interested in other people's work only as much as it affects him. He picks it up from the general media the same way everybody else does. He says he's never had the honor of going to Studio 54, and he never goes to the Ritz to see Jerry Lee Lewis, despite what other magazines have written about him.
Right.
I mean, he knows what's going on because he listens to the TV, but the competition simply doesn't interest him.
Right.
He said he's never been a fan. He was always too busy making music. And I think there's something else, too. What he's been doing for the last umpteen years is clearing out, in John's words, clearing out the damn channel so music could come through. What he means by that is that the messages were confused coming in, and therefore they were confused going out, and it was apparent in the last album, his last solo album of new material, which was Walls and Bridges. He had to stop picking up every radio station in the world in his head. And he was tired of making music because he was supposed to, so he simply tuned a lot of those stations out. He couldn't hear the music for the noise in his own head. It was like not being able to see the forest for the trees. He had to stop listening.
You ask him a very interesting question about whether it was hard to get back into writing music. And this is his response, John Lennon.
At first it was very odd because I felt like I'm supposed to, I ought to.
Yeah.
But musically my mind was just a big clutter.
You mean you had nothing to say or you had...
There's never anything to say. If you listen to any of my early records, they're always on the dumb track on Sgt. Pepper called Good Morning with the line, nothing to say. There is absolutely nothing to say. You just say the same thing in many different ways. So there's never anything to say. There's only descriptions or paintings of what, you know, you make a painting of what is. It doesn't say anything particular. So I never have any illusions about having anything to say. There's nothing to say. But it's okay, good morning, good morning, as the dumb song goes. Quack, quack, quack.
So that's all it was, huh? Just quack, quack, quack. John Lennon, we'll hear more from Barbara Graustark, who interviewed John Lennon, and from John Lennon, recorded on tape himself at WNEW-FM. The Beatles released this song about that very odd couple. things had only started to get weird for John and Yoko in 1969, and of course it continued on. Now, John and Yoko were associated with many political movements, quote-unquote, perhaps of a radical nature. And Barbara Graustark, you spoke with John Lennon. What does he reflect back on this period of being associated with that whole, you know, point in time?
I think a lot of it was, John said, letting it all hang out. You know, he and Yoko met, two shooting stars met and created a few sparks, says John. John, looking back, had a feeling that a lot of the radicalism was phony because he felt some of it was out of guilt because he had made a lot of money and couldn't reconcile having made a fortune with the fact that he thought like a socialist Englishman, even though a lot of socialist Englishmen were lords. But one thing that I think they both feel strongly about, John and Yoko, is the fact that the bed-ins and the acorns for peace and all of the politically correct benefits, you know, John and Yoko didn't take any money from about 20 concerts they gave after the Beatles, that all of that love and peace that we remember, well, nothing has really changed, and I think Yoko said it very well.
A lot of things happened, and I don't think it was just us. I think that, you know, maybe the press grew up about us more. But not really. I mean, a lot of people doing a lot of things then for the betterment of the world or whatever. And it worked. A lot of things did work in a way. I think that the fact that the Vietnam War was stopped, you know, at all, had a lot to do with people really resisting torture. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things really worked.
When you look back at the bed-in and sending acorns, would you have done that? Would you do that today?
I mean, there's no reason to repeat it now, but at the time, that was, I don't regret that we did, you know, something that we did. And on a sort of spirit level, I'm sure that it sent some vibes to people, good vibes.
But you don't regret it now?
No. I mean,
there's no sense of... There was also throughout...
It was good that we did.
Throughout the music, and even throughout, certainly in the songs and in your messages, and also even in the opening letter of the New York Times, there was a feeling somehow that love would change things. Do you still believe that?
I believe that love is everything.
A beautiful song from John Lennon called Love, and the Beatles and All You Need Is Love, and before that, comments from Yoko about that time and place way back when in the 60s when all you need was, is, could be, should have been love. This is Dennis Eltis at WNEW-FM in New York. If you've just joined us, what you're listening to tonight is a special built around this week's interview in Newsweek magazine that was conducted by Barbara Graustark with John and Yoko, and it's primarily John's comments that appear in print. Though Yoko's are also there, and we just heard a comment from Yoko, and we'll speak some more with Barbara, and we'll hear some more from John about what's going down with the Lennons here at WNEW-FM. In the studio with me tonight, Barbara Graustark of Newsweek magazine. It is in Newsweek magazine this week that the exclusive interview with John Lennon appears. Now, you have had a very special experience that most of the world has not had. You've had a chance to hear some of the music which will appear on the album whenever it is released. I imagine sometime before Thanksgiving, I think, is perhaps...
I think mid-November is what they're saying.
A projected date. An album that is coming from John and Yoko. According to your article, the album is called Double Fantasy. And you wrote here, it's a Scenes from a Marriage, in a sense, in 14 songs, 7 by Lennon and 7 by Ono. What can you tell us about the music you've heard so far?
Well, first of all, let's start with the fact that it is a collaboration, because that's important. I mean, it is John and Yoko, 14 songs, but his songs and her songs alternate. And it's frankly autobiographical, and that's why I said it's sort of like Scenes from a Marriage, but really is a dialogue between a man and a woman, and it's designed for people who have had relationships and can understand the nature of their own relationship. What the music is like is, it's a great pop album. I've heard snippets of some songs, I've heard other songs completely through, and the album is wide-ranging in mood and in emotion. And it has a song called Beautiful Boy, which is John's song to Sean, which is his lovely To my way of thinking, it's as beautiful a song as My Sweet Lord. Watching The Wheels, one of his songs which describes his philosophy, really what he has been doing for the last 5 years, watching the wheels spin around is as lovely as Imagine. Yoko adds a note of whimsy on one song and a harsh rock disco beat on another song, and I think she could probably have a top 10 single out of it, which is something a little different from what we'd expect of Yoko. But let's not forget, too, that Yoko was really doing new wave, or Yoko was punk before there was a punk. Lena Lovitch can come out and warble and hiccup and whoop, but it was Yoko who was exploring the avant-garde way back when.
That's for sure. That's for sure. Now, I imagine that because it is going to be quite clearly a collaboration here. This is right. Not going to be simply a John Lennon album.
Right.
This is an album from the Lennons.
Not only is it an album from the Lennons, but they've already recorded enough material for most of a second album from the Lennons, and that will be followed up, as I understand it, when this album is released, they're planning on doing a worldwide tour. A limited tour, but maybe 6 or 7 cities.
All right, now don't call us now for where tickets are going on sale. We don't know any of that, but your impression is that there will be some kind of tour.
There'll be. That's what I understand.
Oh. Well, there has also been, by the way, reports in various publications that the Lennons have signed to a record company called Geffen Records. Some of you may be familiar with a man named David Geffen, who many years ago was involved with Asylum Records and most recently has started a brand new record company, which is to be distributed through Warner Brothers. And in the last few weeks, he's released a record by Donna Summer, signed Elton John, and now reportedly has signed the Lennons. Which would be quite a company. John and Yoko recording together and touring together, perhaps. And John kind of puts to rest in this interview all of those comments through the years which were raised about, well, it was Yoko that not necessarily
wrenched him away from the band, really, and the reports, oh, Yoko destroyed the Beatles.
Right.
But I think John has another way for telling us how it really ended.
Let's listen to it.
I was always waiting for a reason to get out of the Beatles, from the day I made How on the Wall, from way, way back then. I just didn't have the guts to do it, because I didn't know where to go, you see? I couldn't deal with not being continually on stage. But that was the first time when I thought, my God, you know, what do you do? What does one do if this isn't going on? What the hell is this? There's nothing. I could never step out because it was too frightening to step out of the palace. I think that's what kills people, like Presley, physically, and others of that ilk, who die in public, and there are lots of people who die privately. The king is always killed by his courtiers, not by his enemies. His enemies are his friends, in quotes. The king is overfed, overindulged, overdrugged, overdrunk, anything to keep the king tied to the throne.
Richard Nixon.
Nixon, Elvis Presley, most people in that position never wake up. They either die mentally or physically, or both. And what Yoko did for me, apart from liberate me to be a feminist, was liberate me from that situation. And that's how the Beatles ended. Not because Yoko split the Beatles, because Yoko showed me what it was to be Elvis Beatle, and to be surrounded by sycophant slaves and people who are only interested in keeping the situation as it was. And therefore that's a kind of death.
John Lennon, and it's just unfortunate tonight that we don't really have any recent music from John Lennon to play, but we will soon. We will soon, no doubt, hopefully by November. I don't know, it'll be the 5th of November as that song ends. John Lennon and Remember, the Plastic Ono Band at WNEW-FM. We're talking tonight with Barbara Graustark of Newsweek magazine, and it is in Newsweek that the interview with John Lennon appears. And we've been very fortunate. I would just like to take this opportunity now to thank Barbara and thank Newsweek and thank the Lennons for giving us the chance to use all the material that we've been using tonight. And I'd also like to make a special mention of some of the people around here. Marty Martinez in the newsroom, Dan Neer, Jim Monahan, who really put in a lot of extra time today so that this special, as it were, could come out as well as I hope it is coming out here at 102.7. This is Dennis Elsis, and there is a piece in your article which has John talking about his relationship with Paul that's simultaneously humorous and bitter at the same time. What type of feelings do you get that he has about George or Ringo, or specifically Paul, because it's Paul that he deals with in your interview?
Well, he says he never really thinks about Paul at all unless somebody brings him up. But, you know, most of the time during the interview, Lennon is very much at ease with himself and the world, and somehow when the mention of McCartney, or the Beatles for that matter, there's an edge to it. There's a real agitation, you see. He jumps on the question. So I don't know. I think he probably does think about Paul a little bit more than he says, but what he does say is that he hasn't seen him very much recently. And in fact, the last time he saw them, McCartney just appeared at his door, knocked on the door one day, and this is what happened.
All right. Now, this is a piece from the interview. The quality is a little difficult to hear, but the setup, I guess, most appropriately is that you say that McCartney had said that Lennon had done everything but be himself, and John kind of reacts to that statement. Listen carefully.
Well, you know, I don't know what that means, because I was always myself in the situation I was in. But what is yourself, you know? We're all like chameleons. I'm one self of you, another self of somebody else. He's just trying to come up with an answer, because every time he does an interview, they ask him about me or the Beatles. So look, he's had to come up with a pat answer. It's not bad, but that doesn't make any sense. He didn't know what the fellow was doing, that's what he knew. And he had to come up with something. He was as curious as everybody else. What are they doing there? What are they doing all the time?
Were you in touch with him?
No, not in touch with anybody.
But wait a minute. I thought that Yoko said that you have seen Paul.
Well, that was about 2 years, I don't know what, 3 years ago? He used to turn up at the door with a guitar. So I said, do you mind ringing first? You know, I've just had a hard day with the baby.
Yes. What was the last time he turned up at the door?
I don't know. 3 years ago, 4 years ago or something. I can't remember. But I said, look, you know, just call because I've had a hard day with the baby, you know. I'm worn out and you're walking in with a damn guitar.
John Lennon. WNEW-FM. There's a little bit more left to all of this, and we'll get to it in a second. WNEW-FM in New York, and my guest tonight has been Barbara Graustark of Newsweek magazine. It's on the stands now, by the way. If you haven't had a chance to pick it up yet, I strongly recommend that you do. Vanessa Redgrave is on the cover, and inside is the story we've been talking about on page 76 and 77. The Real John Lennon is the title of the story, and it's the first interview in 5 years that anyone has had with John and Yoko, and in it, well, there's a lot of answers to a lot of questions that we've all had through the years about where he is, what he's doing, and the reports basically are that he's doing fine. They're both doing fine, that John and Yoko are making new music, they're healthy, they're happy, they have a baby. Well, not a baby, the boy will be 5 years old, same day as John will, October 9th. And that the album will be out shortly, probably within the next 2 months or so. Did you have a good time doing it, Barbara?
I had a great time.
Yeah?
I'm still on cloud nine, I think.
Oh, that's... You...
And they fed me very well, Dennis, I have to say that. I had tons of sushi and great green tea.
All right. I couldn't let you leave tonight, and I couldn't close this program tonight without dealing with the question that, that everyone asks them as... boring as it gets. I mean, John was my guest in these very studios. It is literally 6 years ago in less than a week. It was September 28th, 1974, that John Lennon became the first Beatle ever to come to WNEW-FM and do a live interview, and it was a treat for me, and I asked him at that time how he felt about the Beatles and so on and so forth, and we spoke to Paul about it, and you spoke to him about it. You spoke about whether he grieved over the death of the Beatles and how he perceived the Beatles at this point in time.
I asked him the same old boring questions, too. My question was whether or not he ever yearned for the good old days. And my other question, really, was whether he felt he needed the magic of that collaboration, that wonderful chemistry, to produce his best material. And he answered very honestly.
So whatever it was that made the Beatles also made the 60s also made the post-war generation in England that wasn't sent into the army, the post-war generation that wasn't sent into the army. The Beatles were whatever the Beatles were. And I certainly don't need it to do what I'm doing now. It could never be. Anybody that thinks that if John and Paul got together with George and Ringo, the Beatles would exist out of their skulls.
Well, the only reason for George and Paul to get together at all would be that in the past 10 years, so much has happened in your own music that it would be interesting to see what happened.
It would
in
be
the
just
studio.
As interesting if I went in the studio with Mick Jagger or Yoko Ono. I've chosen to go with Yoko Ono. That would be interesting. I'm not against collaborating with other people. I'm not looking to play all the instruments, you know, but I'm not looking to go back to school. And going back to the Beatles is like going back to school. Then was then. And it just, there's no reason to. The Beatles exist as they ever did on the records. So why do people keep asking for the Beatles? I don't know. The Beatles gave everything they've got to give and more, and it exists on record. There's no need for the Beatles, for what people think of the Beatles, of the four guys that used to be that group, that can never ever be that group again, even if they wanted to be, trying to do it again. And to say that it would be an interesting musical experiment is just intellectual garbage. You mean if Paul McCartney and John Lennon got together, would they produce some good songs? Maybe, maybe not. But whether George and Ringo joined in or not is irrelevant, because Paul and I created the music. Okay? And I don't have a problem about the Beatles. I don't have a problem about Paul, George and Ringo. It's fine, but it was them. And they're old school friends. You know, that I went to college with them, but I was never one for reunions. I never went back to my old grammar school or my old art school. I'm one of those people, you know, I don't see, heart don't grieve, it's all over.
Or thereabouts, since we have had any new music from this gentleman. And I'm looking at the cover of the single. It's a picture sleeve, and it features him and his wife kissing each other. The B-side of the single is called Kiss, Kiss, Kiss. But we don't have the B-side yet. We just have the A-side. It's a brand-new record label, too, a record label called Geffen Records, which refers to a man named David Geffen, who has gotten himself very actively back into the music business after having been away for a while. Anyway, it's brand new, it is certainly different, and it's from the forthcoming album, Double Fantasy. The song is called, appropriately enough, Just Like, those words in parentheses, and the actual title is Starting Over. This is brand new music at WNEW-FM from John Lennon.